Hi there, my name is Warren Douglas Curry. I am 76 years old. I was born August 1st, 1928.
Please state your full name, age, and date of birth.
Okay, my full name is Warren Douglas Curry. That's C-U-R-R-Y. And my age is 76. My birth date is August 1, 1928.
Okay. Well, I want to talk to you about your first impressions of Union County. Can you describe to me the first day that you came to Union County?
Oh, yes. I remember it very well. That was way back in August of 1953. I had been going to radio school and had graduated and had been contacted by Ken Lullard, who was the manager of KLBM here in the Grand. We were the biggest and only radio station here at the time. And he invited me to come to Le Grand and see what I thought. So I had gotten become engaged in the meantime. I thought, well, okay, we'll go look and see. So my fiance and I drove over here. And the closer we got to Eastern Oregon, the most unhappy I became, because I thought this is just like it was in Wyoming where I left, sagebrush and nothing. And then we climbed the hill, Cabbage Hill, and got into the trees, and I thought, whoa, I think we just died and went to heaven or somewhere. Where's that wonderful place you go? Oh, I can't think of the name of it. Oh, in Lost Horizon. Well, anyway, that place. And I thought, gee, that's where we've ended up here. And then we did drop down into the Grand Ronde Valley, and I thought, I think I'm going to like this already. So we did check out the radio station, and being my first job and all, absolutely scared to death, you know. I thought, well, if I'm going to get married, I better get a job. So I said, we'll do this. We'll take it. So we decided to move to Le Grand, or I did, before we were married. And my first day here was September, and this is ironic, September 11th, 1953, at 11:30 in the morning. Little did I know that date was going to be so memorable later on in my life. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's when it all started for me, and managed to stay 36 years.
Okay. On that first day when you came to Le Grand, where did you stay?
You mean where did I live?
No, where did you stay on your visit? Not when you moved here, but when you came to visit.
Oh, that at the Sacagawea Hotel, the original, where the U.S. Bank is now.
Okay.
We both stayed there in separate rooms, I might add.
Okay.
In those days, you know, you had to be proper.
So this was on Main Street.
On Adams. On Adams, yes. Adams and Elm.
Can you tell me why you picked that place to stay?
Well, not really, except that it was one of the biggest hotels here and looked like it might be the neatest. It had a coffee shop and a bar.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, what else do I need?
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was not the only hotel in town?
No. The there was the Foley Hotel at that time, down where the telephone company building is now. And I think those were, as I remember, the two main ones. Of course, there were several motels.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sacagawea, and of course I realized the historical factor of it, the name, and I'm very familiar with Sacagawea. We didn't go to school together or anything like that, but I read about her in school a lot.
Uh-huh.
So it just kind of clicked. I thought, well, I'll stay here.
Do you remember what the rate of the hotel
I
was?
I have no idea, honestly, but I'm sure it was a lot less than it is now.
I'm sure it was. So you moved to Union County September 11th, 1953.
Right.
Do you recall the population of Le Grand when you moved here?
Not really. I'm guessing probably 10,000 somewhere in there.
Okay. What did it look like?
A Well, pretty much as it does now, except you didn't have the freeway. They had the old highway coming in. Pardon me. But Adams Avenue is pretty much like it was. There's different businesses now. Mm-hmm. But basically, there hasn't been all that much change. Most of the change has come about on the Island City Strip. Mm-hmm. That used to be just a road to Island City, but not a whole lot between La Grande and Island City.
Do you recall any of the businesses that were downtown?
Yeah, let's see. Bone and Camps, which is no longer there.
So Paul. What did Bone and Camps do?
It was a hardware type store. And then Zimmerman's was a furniture store on the other corner. The Granada Theater was here. And I think, as I remember, also the Liberty Theater, which was way down at the other end of Adams, kind of where Domino's is now. Trapadera was here. Lawrence's Jewelry, Bernie's Jewelry, J.C. Penney, Ann Johnson's, which is not here anymore.
What sort of store was that?
The ladies' fashions.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a Chinese restaurant pretty close to it, Something Noodles. I don't remember the name of that one. And Charlie's Florist, on the corner there, next to Ann Johnson's, right across from the Sacagawea Hotel. And that has moved about three or four times. But many of the businesses that were here at that time are still here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of new ones, too, of course.
Okay. Was there anything in town that enticed you to move here? Besides the beauty of the
surroundings? That's just about it. You know, the location and being fairly close to Portland, where our families were, in case we wanted to go back to visit or whatever. And I don't really recollect that we were so close to Boise. I think Maine and in the mountain areas.
Mm-hmm.
And then being close to Malala and Malala Lake was also a deciding factor. We weren't skiers, so we didn't care that much about Anthony Lakes,
mm-hmm.
as far as skiing goes, you know.
Was Hot Lake operating at that time?
Hot Lake was here, and I do remember, I want to say Dr. Roth, I can't remember if that is right or not, but they did have some patients that were out there being treated with the mineral water and stuff, and they did have their restaurant going at that time, but it was a very small scale. The biggest thing I remember about Hot Lake at that time was the little lake out in front with all the lily pads. It was just covered with those things. But of course, that's all gone now. Hopefully, manuals will replant or whatever. But it was operating, but on a small scale.
Mm-hmm. When you moved to Union County, did you rent a home? Or buy a home?
No, rent.
Okay.
Actually, we rented an apartment in the Grand Draw Apartments on the second floor, and that since has had a major fire. The third floor was all burned off. But after we were married, which was in November of that year, then we moved into the Grand Draw, and then to a small house on Washington, near Lynch Motors. And then we bought a home, one of the first homes that was built out in Progress Plaza. There were five of us originally, so we bought a home out there.
Do you recall the price then?
Yes, I do. It was $19,000 and something rather, but the main thing about the price I remember that it included taxes, $98 a month.
Wow.
That'll never happen again.
Probably not. So when you were renting, do you recall what you had to pay for rent?
You know, I don't. I really don't. It couldn't have been a lot because I was only making $250 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So to pay rent and groceries and everything else, you know. So it couldn't have been a whole lot. To me, it seemed like a lot then, of course.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall the utilities? What sorts of utilities you had to pay then?
The price, I do not know. We had we heated by oil, and we had electricity, of course, and we paid the water bill. But I have no idea what the prices were. I just don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Did you have garbage pickup?
You know, I know. Yes, we did, but I don't know if we paid for that or if it was included in the rent. The place where we dumped garbage was so far from the house, I don't remember them ever coming by to pick it up or whatever.
Okay. Were your children born in LaGrande?
Oh, yes, yes. All five of them at the St. Joseph Hospital, which up on K Avenue, which is now CHD and Circuit Court building.
Mm-hmm.
Third floor, yeah, all five of them. And we have six children. My second wife had a daughter, and she was born in Portland.
What was the hospital like at that time?
Well, it was pretty neat. I remember one thing for sure, you could smoke in the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that anymore, nor would I want to. But I do remember that we could. It was, of course, very clean. And of course, it was run by the sisters. It was a Catholic hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very neat, very accommodating, excellent care. And at that time, I think, as I remember, we had the old hospital up on the corner where White Birch Apartments is now located, on the curve just going out of town, going west. It was... No, I can't. I want to say Grand Ron, but that's not right. I don't think. Well, anyway, that was a hospital. It has since closed, and they built the new one.
Mm-hmm.
We have it now.
Were you in the room when your children were born?
No.
Or in the waiting room?
No, they didn't let us do that then.
Mm-hmm.
No, we had to wait in the room, and they hauled our wives way off down and closed the doors, you know. No, they don't do it like they do now.
Right. What shape was the facility in at that time?
Excellent. Excellent, yes. It hasn't really changed all that much internally that I'm aware of. I know the steps out in front are beginning to get a little haggard and broken, but they're trying to repair those and fix them. But it was just really quite neat. The elevators were very good. That two of them, as I remember, one at each end. And then the sisters lived in that small building just east of the CHD facility up there now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really quite good. I wasn't all that familiar with hospitals, but for us it was great.
Were the sisters part of the nursing?
Oh, they were the nurses.
They were
Yes, yes.
Okay. So was there a Catholic background in the hospital? Or did you feel any influence? As far as religion in the hospital?
Not overly. Of course, they had some statues here and there. And with the habits that the nurses wore, you were aware that it was Catholic. But not at all intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bit. No, they were great to everyone.
And where did your children go to school?
Here in LaGrande. They started out at the Ackerman School on campus. And then, of course, from there to junior high before we had middle school and then high school.
Are those buildings the same now as they were?
Well, they've changed. They've built a new middle school and took the junior high kind of down, kept up part of it, but they built a new middle school. And the high school has had, I think, two additions over the years, but pretty much where it is now.
Let's talk about working in Union County. Tell me about your job at the radio station.
Well, it was really wonderful. As I say, when I started out, I was just scared to death. My very first job in radio. And as I remember, like I said, I started at 11:30 in the morning, my shift. And as I remember, it was a program was called Buyer's Guide. People could call in and kind of like a want ad thing on the air. Little small things that for sale, to give away, whatever, you know. And then we had this gong thing like the NBC, da-da-da, you know. Mm-hmm. And after each item, we had to hit one of those. Well, I don't know how many of those I read and missed the gong and hit the wood or whatever, you know, clank. I finally got the hang of that pretty good. And then, of course, played a lot of records, 78s in those days. I think we had, our engineer at the time had built a 45 record player. And I think we probably had 145 records, and that was it. The rest of them were all 78s or these big 16-inch records. They're bigger than albums. They were 16 inches. It was called a standard library. We used that a lot. But then read news periodically, read a lot of commercials. All we had very little tape stuff in those days. I don't think cartridges had been invented. Mm-hmm. But and then just basically about a 6-hour shift or so, you know.
And what were you earning again?
$250 a month. And really thrilled.
Did you choose the music that was played?
Oh, yes. No, we got to choose our own. And then, of course, people would call in and request. We did have a request hour. But people would call in anyway during the day and say, you know, play this, play that, whatever. I remember specifically when Elvis Presley first came out on Sun Records, he had a record called I Don't Care If the Sun Don't Shine. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I tried to play it a lot. Nobody ever requested it. Like, who in the world is Elvis Presley, you know? Until Hound Dog and Blue Suede Shoes came out. Oh, my gosh. Which I could not stand. I thought, yuck. But those are the ones that made him popular. And then Willie Nelson was another one. I tried to play a lot of his music, but I didn't get any response. Nobody seemed to think he was ever going to amount to anything. Well, he did. Mm-hmm. He sure did. But we did get to pick our own music.
Did you answer your own request line?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, it was mail-in. People had to mail in requests.
Oh.
Yep. And send cards or letters in. We didn't. The ones we did by phone were just casual, you know. It wasn't an on-purpose type thing.
Mm-hmm. Were there limitations on what sort of music could be played?
Well, in those days, not really, because most of the music was okay. You didn't have any swear words or anything like that, you know. And heck, the only thing I objected to most of the time, good, were these records that talked about divorce, triangle, romantic things, you know. I thought, is that all they can write about, you know? You know, Grandma got hit by the train, and this type of stuff. I actually wrote a letter to Nashville once about that. I said, can't you straighten out these people and have them stop writing this kind of music? And they didn't. I got no letter back from Nashville. Nashville is still there, going strong.
Did you experience censorship in any other way?
Not really. Everything was really cool in those days. You just didn't have anything to be censored for. And, of course, you didn't dare use profanity on the air. Mm-hmm. No way.
Were there, you said you couldn't use profanity, but were there other certain words that maybe are used now that you weren't allowed to use then?
No, just profanity and the usual four-letter words, you know, just were unheard of. You didn't even think about using them.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really have that much talk time like they do now. Whenever we were talking, it was mostly reading commercials or reading news or introducing records or whatever. We just didn't have what they call talk radio like they do now.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have much chance, you know, to get off track. with the language.
Where was the radio station?
When I first came here, it was out on Adams Avenue, way out. I'm trying to think who's there now. That one where you drive in to go to Bi-Mart after you've gone out of town a ways. I think Larry's Olympia warehouse is there on one side, and then on the other side is a mushroom buyer or something, but it's out in that area right there. And that was, we were there until 1955. Then we moved into the Sacagawea Hotel downtown on the mezzanine at that time.
Were there any other buildings located near the radio station when it was out on Adams?
No, actually, it was. We were pretty much out in the country, and at that time we had a big tower which stood right there, a self-supporting tower, and it was all kind of right there. There were some homes nearby, but Bi-Mart wasn't there or anything like that. It was not there.
How long was that radio station in existence before you arrived?
Well, as I remember, they went on the air in 1938, and I think they first were located in the old Sacagawea Hotel in one of the back rooms up on the mezzanine floor somewhere. I never did really learn the true story on that, but I think it was 1938 when they started up there.
Was it the same? Who was the owner when you...
When I came here, the owner, let's see, NN Radio Incorporated is what it was called. And Lee Jacobs at that time was the president. Gordon Capps from Ontario, KSRV in Ontario. And Ken Lockwood in Baker, I think, were the main ones, and Ken Lillard, of course, was our manager here in the Grand at KLBM.
Can you describe the equipment that was used in your job?
Boy. Oh, yeah. Pretty antiquated compared to what we have now. At the time, I thought it was really first-rate stuff, you know, and it was, really. We had two great turntables and a full-fledged console with knobs and dials like crazy. And then that 45 record player I told you, which was kind of a homemade thing, but it worked. And we had a studio with microphones so we could do live broadcasts from the studio. And I remember when we moved from out on the highway up into the hotel, then is when cartridges became popular. And I remember saying to the other guys, I said, why in the world are they even ballyhooing those? They're never going to be popular. Who'd want to have a cartridge? Well, I couldn't have gotten along without them after that, you know.
Was this an 8-track cartridge?
No. No, they're single tracks.
Oh.
But they were specifically designed for broadcast, you know.
Okay.
And then things just got better and better. Better tape recorders that played longer. Then they came out with a long play tape. Put a tape on the thing, go for like 3 hours, which was just unheard of. You had to be careful when you rewound it. You didn't stretch it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, then did you record, you pre-recorded your show?
No, but we did pre-record a lot of interviews and things that we played back later. And then when we joined the ABC radio network, then we taped a lot of programs. Paul Harvey, Alex Dreyer, some of the other guys, I've almost forgotten their names now. But we taped their programs earlier and then delayed broadcast. Sometimes we took them live.
Where was the radio tower located once you moved to the Sacagawea?
About where it is now, out on Cove Avenue.
Can tell me about some of the memorable interviews you may have done?
Well, actually, I myself did very few interviews. Most of that was up to the news department. Bob Mask was our local newsman at that time, and he did almost all of the interviews. So I really don't have any memories of doing anything special with interviews.
Okay. Were you always a DJ at the radio, or did you have another position?
Well, it evolved into several things. It started out as a DJ, and then it worked into sales. I became a salesman, and was assistant manager for a while.
Can you tell me more about your work in sales?
Yes, it was really quite interesting. It was very hard to explain to people, well, how do you sell airtime? I mean, you know, it's air. How do you sell it? Well, you had to explain to them what you were talking about with commercials. And in those days, radio was still pretty new as far as advertising. So you had to convince people that a number of people would hear the announcement and so forth. So sales was really very interesting. I liked it really well.
Do you recall what types of ads you were selling?
Oh, all kinds. And sometimes we would get to do our own commercials. And some you could make them humorous, and some wanted them straight. I do remember one I was doing once for the old Montgomery Ward store. This is when barbecue braziers were becoming very popular.
So what is that?
Braziers, like barbecuing outside, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing up this real good commercial and reading it on the air and just having the time of my life, and said, stopping and see the new braziers. The new barbecue braziers at Montgomery Ward. I remember that day. I did not get fired.
Do you recall how much ads were selling for? Did you have any knowledge of that part of the
Well, I did have, but I don't remember. We're talking probably like $250 for a 30-second commercial in that general area. And then, of course, that packages, you know, the more you buy, the cheaper they get. If you buy a 60-spot package, or if you go on a yearly contract, this type of thing.
Was that $2.50?
Yes.
And that could be played as many times as they wanted?
No, that would be a time per spot.
Okay. Do you recall the types of businesses that advertised with you?
Oh, all of them, yeah.
All of the local?
Yeah. None of them could get away from us. We were out chasing them all. You know, oh, everything. You bet.
How did you get news from outside Union County?
We had a teletype, Associated Press, which came in by telephone line and had that going for many, many years. And then eventually we started getting stuff by satellite.
Do you know when that change occurred?
To go satellite? Let's see. Da-da-da-da. Probably about 1980, roughly, about 1980. Then we went into the satellite communications thing. Then we didn't, but since I've left this station, they are now getting music and stuff by satellite.
What is the most memorable time for you working at the radio station?
Oh my goodness, there were so many. Probably to kind of bunch it a little bit together, when we had moved to the Sacagawea Hotel on the mezzanine, that was great because any notables that came to town stayed at the Sac, and we could look out our windows down on the lobby and see all kinds of people. You know, Marty Robbins was here once, I remember, Jeff Chandler, Dorothy Malone, all the people from Pillars of the Sky, or government figures, the governor. I do remember one time, Senator Mark Hatfield was visiting, And he was going up the stairs to the medicine unit. I was going down the stairs. Apparently I had gotten off shift or something. And I don't know why I did this, but it was so dumb. As we're going down the stairs and I passed Senator Hatfield, I said, "Hi, Mark." And when I got to the bottom, I thought, "Oh, you jerk." That was a United States Senator, you idiot. Even if you do know him, you don't call him Mark, you know. But I did.
Did he respond to you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, he did. Oh, that was great. I've almost forgotten about that one.
Is there anything else that sticks out in your mind about your time at the radio station?
Oh, there probably are a lot of them, and I'm going to think of a lot of them after we get through here. And, of course, we were always involved in community affairs. And since we've just had the county fair, we were always doing something with the fair or the Eastern Oregon Livestock Show. We were big into making floats and stuff like that. But I do remember two parades, Union County Fair parades, we decided to be a band. Not a one of us played an instrument. But we used dish tubs for cymbals, you know. And I do remember two things, parades for the Union County Fair. And one was we were going to be a band. Not a one of us played an instrument. So we came up with all this crazy stuff to play, you know, tubs, wash pans. I remember a big wash tub we used for a bass drum. And walked down the street kind of humming stuff, you know. I think one guy did have a kazoo or whatever. But I do remember the funny thing, our manager, Ken Lullard at the time, was the drum major. He was leading out in the front of the band with a baton. And it was hilarious, absolutely hilarious. And then I remember one of the parades. We were the very last entry, and I forget what we called ourselves, but we were picking up manure from the horses. So, but we were all dressed, the girls in formals, and the guys were in suits, white shirt and tie and all that stuff. And here we are shoveling this stuff, you know, at the end of the parade. And we had a great name, but I wish I could remember what it was.
Now, during the fair, did you go out on location?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we had a booth at the fairgrounds, and we did a lot of broadcasting right from the fair. We would have them come into our booth, the livestock people and whatever, and the commercial exhibits, this type of thing. Or we would take a remote microphone or stuff and go out in the field out there at the fair. Yeah, we did a lot of broadcasting at the fair.
And did you work alone or in...
Usually there were at least two of us, one to operate the equipment, and then Bob Mask most of the time, or Ken, were doing the interviews themselves. But you had to have somebody there to kind of watch the equipment, too.
Why would you have to watch the equipment?
Well, to make sure that you have the levels right, that it doesn't get unplugged or something, or, you know, whatever. Something doesn't break down. Mm-hmm. It's just a normal thing to have somebody watching what's going on.
How many hours a day was the radio operating?
At the fair or just generally?
In general.
Yeah. So I think we, for the most part, signed on at 6 in the morning and off at 11 o'clock at night. We were off overnight. And then a few years ago, then we went to a 24-hour operation. But then we were automated and didn't have to have anybody right there at the station.
Let's talk a little bit about entertainment in Union County.
Okay. Well, let's see. Myself, I'm not an entertainer. Not intentionally. I'm a jokester, many people will tell you. But
what did you do for entertainment?
Oh, I see what you're getting at, yes. Well, we had a lot to do. We had a roller skating rink, and we had two movie theaters, and the Trocadero, for those of us that like to go dining and dancing.
Where was that located?
The Trocadero, right, where Steakhouse, Elkhorn Steakhouse is now located, right on Adams.
Yep.
And, of course, there's always picnicking, hiking, water sports. One of the big things, of course, was the Lava Lake up there. And we've always had two nice parks, Riverside and Pioneer. And if we'd wanted to go up into the Elkhorns, up to Anthony Lakes, or to go to Baker City, all up in Malawa County, all over, Elgin, and up into the toll gate area where the ski area is. So that was quite a bit to do, you know, and plus what you wanted to do around your own home, if you want to call it yard work entertaining.
You said there was dining and dancing at the Trocadero.
Yes.
What sorts of music could you expect? Was it live entertainment?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You betcha. And it could be mostly probably country. I remember once the Ink Spots were there performing.
The Ink Spots?
Yes. You probably don't remember them, do you? Or do you? Yeah, it was a famous quartet way back in the 40s, yeah. We're talking real big time here. But they were here, and actually that was more of a concert than anything, because I don't think anybody moved. They had chairs, and once we got situated and they started in, nobody moved to do anything else. They were just infatuated, because they were so good. But the music was varied. But mostly either rock, well, soft rock then, or country.
So what did you wear on a night out?
Oh, gosh. Well, you did not go with suit and tie, or I did not, at least. Some people did, unless you were going to a fancy dinner or something, then you would. But usually it was pretty casual, you know, jeans and shirt, whatever. A lot of more boots. I never got into boots.
Cowboy boots?
Yeah, right.
You mentioned at one time in a previous conversation about the wheel.
That was another hot spot. It was called the Wheel then. It's where 10 Depot Street is now.
Okay.
But it was called the Wheel. And then Dave's Woodshed, and then it became Chris's Woodshed. But much the same thing, dining and dancing. They had really good food. They had a soup, chicken bisque, I think it was called. And they never would give the recipe for it, but it was so good. My.
What kind of food did they serve other than
that? Steaks, pretty much steaks. You know, it was pretty much a popular steak place also. And French fries, you know. The low calorie stuff. No carbs. Yeah, right.
Was there anything else about the Wheel that you recall?
Well, not really. It was a real fun place to go.
Did you bowl?
Yes. Now there's another one, yes. We did have a real fine bowling lanes, Blue Mountain bowling lanes, out where Les Schwab is located now. Or next. In fact, they bought the building next to Les Schwab for storage. But a lot of bowling and a lot of leagues, you know. So bowling was very, very popular. Cliff and Brownie Brim were the owners, as I remember. Lois Ferguson was manager. But it was just a really good, neat place to go. And they had a nice snack bar. And lockers, so people that bowled all the time could store their shoes and stuff like that. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was really a real popular form of entertainment.
Were you a member of a league?
No. I bowled, but I wasn't on league. I was in Portland when I worked for Meyer and Frank, but I didn't join a league here. Didn't really have time to do it.
How big was the bowling alley at that time? How many lanes?
I'm thinking about 10 lanes.
And Were the teams then sponsored by local businesses?
Oh yes, you bet. They had good support.
I've also heard mention of Cass's Tavern.
Okay, now that was located out on what is now the Island City Strip. And I can't even remember about where the location, maybe about where Legacy Ford is now, kind of in that general area. But they had some cabins out there too that people rented. But they did have a tavern, and it was primarily, they had food, you know, they had great burgers, finger steaks. And I remember one thing about that, they would have peanut night. And of course, then they had beer. And so you'd sit at the tables and stuff and eat these peanuts. And so we were out there one night, and I was being so neat and tidy, eat peanuts and put the shells in the ashtray. And the owner came by and said, "Warren, you better not do that anymore, or you're going to have to buy the whole house a round of drinks. Throw them on the floor." And they did. Oh my gosh, the floor was just cluttered with peanut shells. So, I threw them on the floor. You better believe it.
Has the shopping changed in the Grand over the years?
Oh, well, it has, mainly because of the bigger stores now, what with Walmart and Bi-Mart, and some of the smaller stores downtown. Some of the people, you know, have just gotten to the retirement age and have just retired. But there were really some magnificent shopping stores in the Grand that you don't have now because of the bigger stores. People that travel to out of town to shop in the Tri-Cities or Pendleton or wherever. But it has changed. But fortunately, there are still some local businesses that remain. And people, I hope, are still patronizing them, you know.
Do you recall other sorts of entertainment that people in town were interested in at that time?
Well, the gun clubs come to mind. We have two of them. People that, you know, shoot rifles at targets and stuff like that, not each other. I think I've pretty well covered. I'm here again. I'm going to think of a thousand things after we get through here.
Do you feel that Union County was divided by social class, and was that evident in the different forms of entertainment?
I never noticed it. I never did. I never was aware of it anywhere. Now, I didn't mention rodeos. Rodeos were big here with the stock show in Union, the Stampede in Elgin, and then Blue Mountain in the Grand here. And then, of course, they always have big doings at Baker City, and then Chief Joseph Days up in Joseph. So rodeos was a big form. But I never really noticed any class division at all.
So you could expect, if you went out to the local dining hall or lounge, all sorts of people
would be there. Gosh, yes. I never noticed any problem at all. Yellow, pink, purple, black, or whatever, you know.
Public service.
Well, I've been involved in it for many, many years, and it started way back at the radio station. Back in those days, in, you know, early 50s or 60s, you could tell what month it was just by listening to the radio. If you did not have a calendar, you could tell what month it was by what public service spots we were playing promotions. January was always March of Dimes. February was Heart Month. March and April, Easter Seals, you know, this type of thing. And then all of a sudden they kind of ran together. But I got pretty involved with all those, working, not just doing the announcements on KLVN, but actually working with the committees. And many, many, many years ago, I was asked if I would become chairman of the American Red Cross blood program for Union County. And I was a pretty heavy blood donor. So I said, sure, no problem. So I did. And I did that until just, maybe 5 years ago. I 32 years, I think, is what it lasted. But we would organize the blood drives when the blood mobile from Boise would come in and do blood drives, as they do now. So we really pretty heavily involved with that, and that's probably one of the biggest public service things that I have done.
Why Red Cross?
Well, I was familiar with it, and this is kind of a funny tie-in, but when I was in the Navy, back in 1952, we were on, I think, Sasebo, Japan, and they passed the word that they need blood donors ashore. Anybody that would give blood would get liberty for the rest of the day. That's like get the rest of the day off. So I thought, ooh, cool. So a bunch of us signed up for it and went ashore to the hospital and did our thing at giving blood. And I don't remember a thing about it, except afterwards this Navy nurse handed us a little paper cup thing and told us to go out and sit on the front steps. You may not want to include this, but I'm going to say it anyway. And so we did, and I thought, well, this is kind of a strange thing. You give blood and then they want a urine sample. I thought, why? And so anyway, I think, why, after you give blood, do they need a urine sample? So we all went out and sat on the front steps, and here came this Navy nurse with a bottle of whiskey and filled these little paper cups up and said, now you guys drink this. And I was not a whiskey drinker, but she was a Navy officer. She had gold bars. I thought, I'm going to drink it. So I did. And after that, and all these 32 years of being involved with the blood program, I never did get whiskey. All I got was orange juice. Oh, my.
So how did you go about arranging the blood drives in LaGrande?
Well, we'd have to find a place, you know, the Lutheran Church, the Methodist Church, sometimes the Catholic Church Parish Hall. Find a place to have it. And then way back then, we had to also get all the nurses that we'd need to work the program, arrange for refreshments, the whole ball of wax. When the blood mobile came in from Boise, they just came in with the van, and that's it. And the six nurses that actually would draw the blood. But we had to have nurses that would do other things, you know, take blood pressure and temperature and all this. So, you got to be quite a routine, and we had such a good committee set up, you know, we just make a couple of phone calls and boom, it was done. And I'm sure it's much the same way now. But over the years, I've lost track, but I think I'm almost 11 gallons of the blood I've donated over the years. And that probably doesn't count the one in Sasebo, Japan.
How many people would you expect to come to a blood drive?
Well, we would have a quota that we'd have to get of try to collect, you know, like 150 units. So, and we had a list of people we'd call.
How many people does it take to fill 150 units?
150 people. Oh, yeah.
Each person gets
yes,
one unit?
Yes, yes, okay. You bet.
Okay. And did that number change over the years?
No, it stays pretty much the same.
Does it?
Yeah. Because Boise has several areas where they draw blood. And, of course, they can only keep it so long. Now they fractionize it into different units, which they didn't do in those days. But there is a limit as to the time that they can keep it before it has to be destroyed.
Were you handling the blood at that time, or only handling the organization?
Just the organization. No, I didn't handle the blood at all.
Okay. So there was no specific training that you had to be involved
in? No. The people from Boise did all that.
What other activities were you involved in?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see. I taught a class at the high school once. Briefly, on the public speaking and teaching the students how to operate the tape recorder and the microphone. Other than than all the public service stuff, that pretty well handled it. That was pretty much full time, just taking care of all that.
Were you involved in any other groups, like the Kiwanis or?
Well, one time, yes, I was a member of Kiwanis, and then the Elks Club. They had JCs, but I was too old for that, I guess. I guess Kiwanis and Elks were the two main ones, yeah. Oh, and then speaking of rodeos, my wife and I were members of Villa Grande Mavericks, which is a riding club still, but they eventually started having their own rodeo, I think about 1971, somewhere in there. And that was a lot of work, you know. We found out it was a year-round job. You get through with one, it's time to start planning the other. And one of the main things about the Mavericks and the Blue Mountain Rodeo that I remember so well is picking rocks in the arena. Going out there and picking those. I'd swear those rocks grow, you know, because every year we'd have to just pick those rocks out of there because you didn't want these cowboys getting bucked off or whatever on these horses, you know. Man. But we were very active with them for many, many years.
Have you seen a change in how the community support is structured around activities like this?
Well, I haven't been involved with them all that much, but it still seems to be pretty active. Now, we don't have Blue Mountain Rodeo anymore, but the Union County Fair still pulls a lot of support, and there's so many volunteers that work together to put all that together. And the same thing with the Eastern Oregon Livestock Show and the Catherine Creek Junior Rodeo, which is great. That's kids' rodeo. And the Stampede and Elgin, Chief Joseph Days. So they all still receive a lot of local volunteer support. So it's pretty much the same.
Were you involved with any of the churches, the local churches?
Oh, yes. Early on, involved pretty heavily with St. Peter's Episcopal Church, because I had joined the Episcopal Church when I was in high school back in Wyoming. And I remember, this is another funny you may not want to include, back in Wyoming, it kind of became the thing to join the Episcopal Church. So a bunch of us guys and gals did, but I got to be an altar boy. And this was really a thrill. I remember 8 o'clock in the morning we had communion, so we'd have to be there to assist the priest. And he'd mix up the wine and the water and get all ready to go for communion. And then when you get all through, of course, we had to consume what was left. And I thought, this goes back kind of like to the orange juice bit and whiskey. And then all of a sudden I got to drink what was left of this wine, or part of it, share it, you know. I thought, well, being an altar boy is not all that bad. At the time, I thought that was a pretty good reason to join the Episcopal Church. And, of course, I realized that there was a lot more to it than that. And then, somewhere in the shuffle here in the Grand, all of a sudden, and I don't really remember the reasoning behind it, probably I think the biggest thing would have been the divorce of my first wife and I. So I kind of lost interest in church altogether. And then all of a sudden, something came up and we got interested in First Christian Church. So we have been with them for many years now and very active.
Do you know how long? Do you know when you started there?
I think it was like 1981.
What was the attitude in the area about the different churches in the Grand?
Well, I don't think there was any attitude necessarily. There were a lot of people that were churchy and a lot of people that weren't. And, you know, you didn't make a big thing about it. At least, I didn't. I figured if they want to go to church, fine. And if they don't, fine. But there was no real big animosity about it, that I was aware of anyway.
Can you describe to me what your involvement was at First Christian Church?
At first, kind of ushering a little bit, and then became a member of diaconate, which helped serve communion, and then eventually became an elder. And also, aside from religious activities, I volunteered, well, I didn't volunteer, I requested to be the new janitor. The one we had was leaving, going to school. And so I thought, well, I wouldn't mind doing that. So, and I got the job to do that. So I was janitor for several years. Liked it very well. And then I got diabetes, and it was a little hard to go up and downstairs and move tables. And so I retired from that at age 69.
Were you involved with any of the youth group in the church?
Just supporting them. I wasn't a teacher or anything like that. But we did work, you know, with the youth kids, and when they had their programs and stuff, we would help them whenever we could, whatever it might take to help them.
Can you think of anything else you were involved in Le Grand that sticks out in your mind?
Well, after we've talked about so many things here, Brenda, I do remember, aside from the Red Cross, I was also very much involved with New Day Enterprises. And I can't remember when I started with that, but it was many, many years ago. They started out kind of in the log cabin out at the fairgrounds, because it was really small. It was a beginning. And then we moved into part of the old St. Joseph Hospital, where CHD is located now, at one end. Then we finally moved to the other end, and then eventually moved to the location now on North Depot. But there have been so many years of so many wonderful things that have happened in that program, and I can't believe what it's done for the people that are involved, the people that work with it, the staff that teaches and works with these people. And then it's just astounding to see the changes that have come about with the clients, you know, the young men and women that are involved with that program. I'm thinking of one young man for sure, and I won't mention names, but he works in a local business in the Grand and has for many years, and he just does an excellent job. just wonderful. So the New Day Enterprises program is a big plus for Union County. And they now have, I think the last count was 5 group homes, in addition to their headquarters there on Depot. And they have since now built a new office facility on Washington, up there near Lynch Motors. So of all the things I've been involved with, I think probably the most rewarding, and it's kind of hard to say this because they all were, but the most rewarding probably would be working with the American Red Cross and with New Day Enterprises.
You've been very involved with people, sounds like, most of your life.
Yes, I really have. Yes.
Very people-oriented.
Yeah.
Have you seen a change in how people interact in this area over the years?
Well, not really as such. If there's any interaction, as far as I'm concerned, it's because I cause it. You know, I try to, at least. It's very hard for me to be unfriendly. I don't know where I learned all this, probably from my parents, because they were both very popular. But I wouldn't know how to live any other way.
One last question to wrap up something that we talked about before. When did you retire from the radio station?
Okay, now we're talking, how many times?
Well, tell me more about that.
Okay, well, the first time, I think, oh my goodness. I wish I could remember the year. Well, I decided that I had probably been at that long enough, so decided to retire, and I did, and they had a big wonderful dinner party for me at Red Lion in Pendleton, and Ken and the troops gave me a very fine gift of fishing gear, because I thought, now I'm going to have time to go fishing. So anyway, I'm guessing that was probably about 1983, somewhere in there. And we had gone to Washington to visit our daughter, who had just had a baby. And while I was up there, I had heard that one of the local salesmen from KLBM was going to quit radio and go full-time at the railroad. I got to thinking about that. I was not happy with retirement at all. So I remember I called Ken from Washington, and I said, you're not going to believe this.